By the way, I'm so sorry that Tehran was making fun of your hair. And this is bullshit, okay? Just because we're bald. Look at you, beautiful bald guy. Look at this. Fucking Tehran with his hair. That's bullshit. Us bald people, come on. We got something. Where's the, any other bald people? It's just me and you? You, there you go. There you go. Look, you look fucking great, man. Show that head. You know what I'm saying? Fucking, we're bald. These guys shampoo. Fuck you. Fucking shampoo. Bullshit. I'll be honest with you guys. I still shampoo. I swear to God. I swear to God. You know why? I swear, in the hopes, every time I shampoo, I hope that, like, the new shampoo that I try just grows a little, just one. I swear, I go like this, and I come out, I'm like, it's growing!
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
You got to film a one-hour comedy special, put it on HBO, people discover you, your career takes off. Then I go, a few years later, they go, you got to take 5 minutes of the 1 hour, you put on YouTube, people discover you, career takes off. Then I go, they said you got to take 1 minute of the five right. minutes, put on Instagram, people discover you, career takes off. I go, now they say you got to take 3 seconds of the 1 minute, you put on TikTok, people discover you, career takes off. And I said, I tell my son, I go, 3 seconds, I don't even know what to say. All I can say is hello, right. goodbye. And my son goes, that's perfect. You know?
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Greene. This is the Dorn into my Dakota, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chrissy.
And best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Thanks for joining us today. TCB infomercial with Maz Giovanni. Very Woo! Excited. Okay, I'll tell the story now because I don't want to tell it while he's here because I feel a little bit embarrassed about it. But I'll share how I know Maz Giovanni. This was an episode so many years ago, I don't even know when it was, and I probably touched on it since. But Maz Giovanni and I spent a long night together at, at an exclusive event.
Spent a night together.
Oh, did we? Oh, that bald head. Two bald heads rubbing in the night. two old bald heads touching in the middle of the night, passing in the night. Maz Giovanni is a very funny stand-up comic and actor, quite frankly. He's done a lot of acting also in his life. He's in one of the best indie comedy movies I think has been made, and that is Jimmy Vestwood. And so it's a take on him being Iranian. Go watch it. You can find it. It's lots of places. It's like from 2015 or something. Why would you need to know the year? Jimmy Vestwood with a V, not Westwood, Vestwood, V-E-S-T-W-O-O-D. Okay, so Chrissy and I are just at the beginning of our podcast.
We were in our infancy.
Infancy. We were maybe 28 episodes, 29 episodes in. I was not Chrissy. Chrissy smartly stayed out of this one, but I went headlong into Clubhouse, the audio social application that blew up during the pandemic. The pandemic had just started because we started this a week after the lockdowns started. So
we started the podcast, not the pandemic.
Started the podcast. We did not start the pandemic. That was Maz's fault. We'll ask him about that.
Yeah.
He's Iranian. We'll ask him about that. I am on Clubhouse probably a month or two after we start the podcast. I get invited to Clubhouse.
It was an exclusive invitation.
It was an exclusive invitation for me and 2.5 million other people.
I remember you saying to me, like, I can get you an
yes.
invitation.
Oh, you had to have an invitation.
And I got on there and yeah. I was like, and?
What? You know, so Allison, my friend, said, have you heard of Clubhouse? I got an invitation. I think I can get you one. And I was like, an invitation? This sounds exciting.
I know. Well, of course, whenever yes. there's an invitation and you don't have it.
Yes. She's like, they're saying it's the new podcasting. And I'm saying, well, I'm new to podcasting. So I'm going to go to another place? Okay, cool. But I was interested. And I admit, Clubhouse had an addictive quality to it because I literally spent days on end. I did not have a crystal meth habit, but I should have. Yes. Someone would ping me into that room at 3 a.m. and I'd be
there. You're there.
I'd wake up and I'd be like sneaking off, and Astrid would be like, where you go? We have a 2-month-old child. And I'd be like, Clubhouse. This is the room. This is the room that's going to get me the note. This is the room that's going to bring all the listeners. This room. And there'd be like 12 people in the room, all high on something. talking nonsense, conspiracy theories. I don't know. Anyway, Clubhouse becomes a thing. I get an invite from Allison. Then all of a sudden, they're giving like 20 invites to everyone who got an invite. So it became unexclusive really quickly. But, you know, millions and millions of people, I think 20 million people in like a 3-month period joined Clubhouse.
Yeah, it was the fastest growing. I remember reading about it. It was
social
like,
media ever. Yeah. Yeah. And then the fastest agrees. Dying. Yeah, Blue agrees too. The mention of Clubhouse and Blue's like, I got to get some sleep. Because Blue would lay at my feet for hours on end while I was doing Clubhouse. So Clubhouse. Then all of a sudden, we're not even on Clubhouse for like 2 months. And then all of a sudden, the whispers start, a whisper campaign for this thing called Fireside. Fireside, have you heard about it? It's going to be the new Clubhouse. The new Clubhouse is Fireside, but it's like HBO. If Clubhouse is like UPN, then Fireside is going to be HBO, and they're going to give you money and all the sponsorships and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, and then.
To be fair, it was backed by Mark Cuban and still is.
And still is backed by Mark Cuban.
Yeah, and so that's a big name.
It's a big name. And
somebody we like.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I like, you know, whatever that show
he's
is.
He's been
Tank.
Successful.
Yeah, he's had a run.
Therefore.
Yeah, he's doing okay. Except for that Doji coin, as President Trump would say, Doji. Yeah. Dog with an E, Doji. So. Then, lo and behold, an invite comes into my inbox, into the general inbox of the commercial break. We like the commercial break. We want you over at Fireside. Meet with the CEO, Fallon Fatemi. Mm-hmm. And I did. And she had a pitch. And man, did that pitch just, my eyes glazed over. I had stars literally blowing out of my asshole.
I remember having the, being in on the, maybe it wasn't the first pitch, but the second pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, they had a well-run machine over
there.
Did. And she's super smart. And you know Mark Cuban
no doubt about
is.
Film.
And so
yeah.
There was a lot of buzz around. It was supposed to be a mix between, you were going to let the people, the listeners, interact with you. And it was kind of a self-contained podcast where you could do video
podcasting, audio,
and push it out to all the RSS.
It was like a podcast with a Clubhouse
a
feature
idea.
Of interaction. And they were going to choose the creators
yes.
who would be able to be on there. Like Clubhouse, anybody could start a room, which
right.
was part of why it became so successful. So they took that part where you get successful out of Fireside.
Well, they were trying to cut out like yeah. hate things.
Yeah, they didn't want a lot of bullshit yeah. and trash, and they didn't want people opening up rooms at 3:30 in the morning for conspiracy theories.
Yes.
They wanted it to be more of like appointment listening
mm-hmm.
or streaming or whatever
yes.
you want to call it. Okay, great, wonderful. So very quickly, I become embedded in the Fireside kind of group. And then, I don't know, 2-3 weeks after we had just been introduced to Fireside, I get an invitation from Fallon to go to a dinner, like an exclusive dinner at one of the podcasting conferences. And Mark Cuban may or may not be one of the guests at the dinner. And so I had no intention of going to this podcast conference because we were brand new. I didn't have enough money to go to the podcast conference. I didn't care that much. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But I got convinced, my wife and Allison and a couple other people, you must go
yes.
to this dinner.
Gotta
Blue agreed then, too.
Yep.
She said, get the fuck out. Stop that Clubhouse bullshit. Get on Fireside. So you 1 hour a day instead of 12. So I ran up to Nashville. I went, I checked into the hotel room, went straight to the dinner, and Mark was there with Maz Gibrani, who was going to be the interviewer on the keynote address at this conference a couple days later. So Maz and I got to know each other a little bit one night, you know, a little bit.
And then, that's the night you spent together.
We spent together. We were hugging and cuddling and doing what men do.
Having drinks.
Yeah. Doing what men do, having drinks and texting my wife obscene things. And then a couple of days later, he gives his keynote address, or Mark and Fallon are interviewed by Maz on stage. And Maz drops my name a couple of times, I guess because I might have said something interesting that whatever. Anyway, so this is how I know Maz Gibrani. And ever since then, I have followed Maz. I find mm-hmm. him to be very funny.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, his social media is fucking hilarious.
He's been in the game for a while. He's a seasoned pro. And yeah.
And so when the opportunity came to get Maz on the show, of course, we jumped at it. And MazJobrani.com is where you can go to get tickets to his tour, which is never ending. He's a journeyman. He's always out there on the road. He's super successful. So he sells out rooms all over the place. And last check, he has dates through 2025. So if you are somewhere close to a major city or a secondary city, he's coming. So please check out those tickets. Also, Birds and Bees is his new special on YouTube. Absolutely free. No charge. No shipping and handling. This guy will let you watch his comedy for free. It's an hour and 15 minutes long. I guarantee you're going to be laughing. And then he's an author. He's been in so many television shows and movies. And I guarantee that if you look up Maz, you're going to know who he is. Mm-hmm. You have seen some of his material because he's just one of those comics, very prolific. So let's do this. Why don't we take a break? And Maz is going to be here with us, you know, now, because that's what we do. We go into the awkward transition phase. Ring. You listen to a couple of commercials. We
the magic.
See if we can technically make
sprinkle
this thing work.
Sprinkle dust. Yes. The quantum witch does her magic.
A little bit of Maz Jobrani, some Rachel Platten and Riverside, and wha-bam! Sorry, out of order. Sorry, you're technically inept. Please update. I've been telling you for months to update, 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 but you didn't listen, did you? So now, wha-bam! You have to do this interview twice. Yeah. That's a different story for a different day. Our apologies to the Platten team, but we'll figure it out. Okay, so let's do this. Let's take a break. And we'll be back with Maz.
Let's do it.
Right after this.
Okay, you guys, I have an idea. Why don't we take a break? Gotcha. This is the break. And you already know when you hear my sexy voice, it's time to whip your phone out and follow us on Instagram or skip the ads at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. And of course, you know, if you want to get involved, you can always give us a call or text us at 212-433-3TCB. That is 212-433-3822. And guess what? I finally have information on TCB Live. So the links are in the show notes, but let me tell you right now, you can come see us at Dania Beach Improv on Tuesday, September 24th, or at the Funny Bone Orlando on Wednesday, September 25th. It's gonna be fab. So go buy your tickets and we'll see you in Florida.
Maz, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. How are you, my friend?
I am well. Life is good. Just busy touring. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
We're doing great.
We're doing great. We're Olympic crazy here at the Commercial Break.
I can't stop watching it. There's so much to see. It's so entertaining.
It is entertaining to watch.
I've been touring and I've had a lot going on. So every time I sit on a couch, I'll turn it on. I was used to every time I sit on a couch, I'd turn on the news.
Yes.
Now I'm like, all right, let me get past the news and get in the Olympics. And then depending on what it is, some of the events are amazing. They're all amazing. I mean, I was saying when I watch badminton, it makes me want to swat flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's that badminton. I don't know. They play it so fucking fast and furious. And I remember playing badminton and I don't remember us being that aggressive. And ping pong too. That ping pong is crazy.
Well, the fast. I watched rock climbing the other night. And I mean, they go up in like 4 seconds.
Speed climbing.
Wow. Yeah, the speed climbing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So much. So many interesting things. The things that you didn't like realize, like, and they were doing the team synchronized swimming, and I was just seeing highlights online, and I don't know if you saw like the U.S. I don't know, I think it was the U.S. team. One of these teams that was like doing the Michael Jackson moonwalk.
The U.S. team, yes, yeah. That's insane, I
mean, insane, man.
So on one of the video, like on one of the YouTube channels, they have cameras that are underwater and cameras that are above, so they show you like a split screen. Those girls are underwater.
I saw that.
For like, I don't know, what seems like 18 minutes at a time. I don't know how long it is, but it seems like 18 minutes at a time. And I can't swim from one end of a pool to the other underwater. And I'm like, Jesus, Jones.
Dude.
It takes a lot of training.
And the camera work and everything, too. I just did shows in Houston where, you know, as comedians now, we set up our cameras and we film ourselves so that we can get crowd work and post it on social. So at the club, I just got one of the guys working there. I was like, listen, when I go on stage, all you got to do is hit play, you know, hit record. Just make sure that I'm in focus and we're good to go.
Yeah.
And I just gave the stuff to my editor. My editor is like, you're not in focus. And I'm like, These guys are filming stuff underwater. Right. We can't get one shot in focus. Come on, man.
My son is like fascinated on the track, how that they have that little thing that sits on the track right next to it. And it follows it as fast as it goes. And he's like, what's that, Dad? And I'm like, it's an actual camera. And they could do it in focus. And then they can figure out who won, whose chest came across the line first. And you're so right. We've been doing this podcast for almost 5 years. And we still don't know how to center ourselves.
We're always like, are we off?
Are we in center?
I'm telling you. And by the way, that speaking of photo finishes, that photo finish, I had to go read about it because I was like, wait a minute, the other guy's toe is ahead of his toe.
Oh yeah, the 100 meter.
And it's the torso, it's not the toe. It's like, oh my God.
I did not know that, Maz, until I actually read about it, because I was also confused. I was like, wait, the other guy came first. I thought it was whichever body part touched, and that's why they kind of lean their heads in. And no, it's all about the torso. And I don't know, I feel like the Paris Olympic, you know, there's a lot, we've all been alive for a minute and we've seen a lot of Olympics, but I feel like the Paris Olympics to me is the most engaging
in a long time.
They're doing a good job.
Yeah, except the Atlanta Olympics where I spend most of it drunk.
But also you got to realize that somehow the timing works out for us. So like when they have evening stuff, it's a daytime here. And now you've got NBC and then you got Peacock and then you got USA. Like they got so many places that are covering it. So I think it might be like this from here on out, unless, you know, once in a while for us, when they've got those, like when the hours are so wacky, where you're like, three in the morning, everything's happening.
The China one was a little confusing because I couldn't watch anything. It was all at 2 a.m. It was like 12 hours behind us. Maz, you're an incredibly successful stand-up comedian, been doing this for a minute. And I was looking on your website this morning and I see you have dates out until February 2025 too. So you're like the journeyman, right? You're always doing this. You're always on the road. And how do you feel about that so many years later after doing this? Do you love the part of it being on the road? I know you have a family at home. I can't imagine what my wife would think about it. She'd probably like it, actually.
Yeah.
Get out of here. No, it's, the actual act of being on stage is fantastic. Being away from home, being away from your family, being away from your routine, all that stuff. Definitely gets old the longer you do it.
Sure.
In my mind, I go, well, even if I were home and let's say working on a TV show or something, I'd be working crazy hours. So you got to keep working. So I do feel lucky that I get a chance to go on stage. As soon as we have the intro music hit and you're on stage and now you're like, oh, this is fantastic. You know, I just did in Houston, we did 5 shows over the weekend.
Five shows in Houston?
Yeah, you do 2 Friday, 2 at the clubs. You do 2 Friday, hey, 2 okay. Saturday, 1 Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like I said, every time I'm on stage and like, you know, let's say you have 2 shows on Friday, for example. This is actually a great example. Usually Friday late show is the worst crowd for comedians because people are tired, they're drunk, they've already gone and eaten and all that. As a matter of fact, I think Steve Martin, when he wrote his book about stand-up comedy, he said, one of the reasons he quit comedy was the Friday late crowd because he said it was just too much. But just to show you how we're surprised this past weekend, our Friday late crowd was one of our best crowds of the weekend. And it was fun for me because they were so fun. They had so much energy. They were giving me energy and I had a great time. And then also because, I like to talk to the audience as the show goes on, that makes it fun for me. If I were just up there, just reciting the same thing over and over again, I might not be as into it. But once I'm feeling like we're having a dialogue and I'm like, let me tell you, and now I'm doing a bit, but I'm talking to a group that I feel is interested in it and they've been talking to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So all that stuff is pretty lucky stuff.
You're a very conversational comic, and I like that about you. And the crowd work is interesting. I watched a reel where Maz said something, which I didn't see in the reel necessarily, but said something and somebody walked out on you. And he's like, not funny, dude. And I don't know what you said to him because I don't think the reel caught up, like it started before whatever you had interacted. But you were like, come on back, man. This has never happened to me before. Like, come on back. You were begging him. But in a way that wasn't like snarky, it was earnest and organic and sincere. You were like, wait, we can talk it out. And I found that to be really engaging. I don't know. That reel really got to me because, you know, most comics would, fuck off, dude. See you later. You know?
I gave up on the like confrontational. So early on in Trump's first presidency, I was doing material about him and some audience member got mad and then we started arguing and then it just derailed the whole show. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. I said, I'm going to Tai Chi these people. So if you're ever bored, you want to see another moment of dealing with a heckler, just put drunk Trump heckler. And it comes up where this lady towards the end of my set, she'd been with me the whole show. And then she just starts going, I'm offended by what you're saying about our president. And I Tai Chi'd it rather than being like, screw you.
I saw this. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, hey, you know what a great country that you can be offended. I can be offended. I was like, this is a great country. And she kept going and going. I was like, listen, I just got two more Trump jokes. You don't have to stay. You can go.
I saw this.
So I try to deal with it like that a little bit. So in that one that you're talking about where the guy got up and left, that was just – I didn't know why he left. The truth is the comedian before me was this younger comedian, and he was telling a story of when he was in high school. He got upset at the principal and he left his backpack in the principal's office and he stormed out and he said something to the principal or something. And then he had to come back a little later to get the backpack. He's like, I'm sorry, can I just get my backpack? And I just, as a comedian, I was standing off stage and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to riff off of his joke just to riff before I even get into my act. And I was like, he was able to leave his backpack. He's a white person. He came back and got it.
Yeah.
I go, if as a brown person, as someone from the Middle East, if I left my backpack, it's kind of a hacky joke, but it was just more of a let me land kind of a joke. I said, listen, if I left my backpack, you know, who knows who they'd call, you know?
Yeah, and then there was the bomb squad. Whatever.
Exactly. And then there was a guy in the front row who was also of Middle Eastern descent, but was a really big and had a big beard. And he looked the part even more. I go, can you imagine if this guy left his backpack? So I'm just riffing. And at some point, the guy behind him gets up and he grabs his bottle of wine. He had a tall bottle of Evian. He grabs his bottle of Evian, grabs his girlfriend, and they walk out. And I go, where are you going? He goes, I don't like you. And I was like, what? I go, what? I go, first of all, who takes their bottle of water when they're like,
right. You know what
I'm saying? He's like, I paid for it.
Exactly. So to this day, I don't know why he walked out. It was weird.
You're born in Tehran, moved to California early in life, 6 or 7 years old, did I read?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was 6 years old.
So you're 6 years old when you move here. Would it be a stretch to call you maybe the most successful Iranian comic?
I mean, ever? Yeah, you could. You know, it's interesting because I started doing this 26 years ago. So when I first started, there was no other Iranian-American comedians. There was one guy in England. His name's Omid Jalili, who's a friend of mine as well. He'd been starting around the same time. But then I was happy to see as the years went by, more and more people started coming in and coming in. And now there's, you know, a handful of us who are doing it and doing it with different styles even, you know. There's one guy named Amir Kay who had opened for me in the past. He's very funny. He's now on the road with Theo Vaughn. There's another guy named Max Amini who...
I know Max.
Yeah, Max is doing great online and touring. Again, another friend. My opening act is a guy named Tehran. He's half black, half Persian. So there's a lot. There's a handful of us coming through. There's a female Iranian comedian named Melissa Shoshahi. She's coming through.
Tehran,
so it's just nice.
Is from Clubhouse, right? He hit it big in Clubhouse, didn't he? Tehran.
Tehran became huge in Clubhouse. It was interesting because Tehran was my co-host on a podcast we were doing called Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We stopped doing them, but he was my co-host. And it's funny because when Clubhouse was out, he was on there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember one time we were supposed to interview somebody, let's say like 10 in the morning, and he's not coming on. And I go on Clubhouse, and his name's in a room on Clubhouse. So then I send a message. I go, guys, is Tehran in the Clubhouse? And they're like, no, he kept his name on, his phone on, but he's playing basketball. And I was like, what? What the hell's going on?
Clubhouse went shit crazy for a while there.
Oh my God, it was wild.
You, me, Leah Lamar, Tehran, like everybody was in that thing 24 hours a day for a minute. But I want to get back to the Iranian comic thing. Do people come up to you? Do other Iranian comics, do they come up to you and say, hey, We talked to Margaret Cho, who's a living legend.
I was thinking about that too, the parallel.
Margaret told us that she is now at the point in her career where a lot of comics come up to her and say, you inspired me as when I was a kid, or you inspired me to get up on stage, or I knew I could do it once I saw you do it, and talk about these things that were organic and authentic to you and your life. Do people come up and say that
like
to you?
And they looked like her.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Because again, when I started, like even when I was a kid, there was, you know, the only person we had was the Iron Sheik right. in WWF.
Okay. You know? Awesome,
that's right. Yeah.
He's great. He did something for me for my special where he cursed me out. It was great.
Fuck your mother.
Exactly.
He was crazy on the Stern show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do get that. As a matter of fact, it's funny because I forget, you know, as comedians, one of the things that we do is try to stay young of mind, meaning like, you know, we're trying to stay current. We're trying to talk about what's going on. And quite often you find yourself in a green room or somewhere talking to a bunch of comedians of all ages. And you don't realize how young some people are until they remind you. So I just remember I was driving one time with my opening act and we're driving back. And this guy's, he's actually half Indian, half Persian. His name's Omid Singh. And he was driving, and he's like, "Man, I used to watch you when I was in junior high school," or something like that. He's like, "It's so cool that I'm opening for you now." And I was like, "Wait a minute!" I go, "How old are you again?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "I'm 24." I go, "Oh my god, I'm like 20 years older than you." This is like 10 years ago. So yeah, it's you get that, and it's flattering, and it's also a reminder that you're getting older. And if you have any projects, get them done now. Don't wait.
Yeah, amen. We feel you. We're right there. We're right there with you. Yeah. You know, one of the things that Maz is not only a talented stand-up comedian, but also an actor. And I want to share this story with you. So you and I've told this story to the audience, probably to no audience, because it was right after you and I met and no one was listening.
Yeah.
Maz and I met at a dinner that we were invited to. Well, he was part of the crew that was hosting, but I was invited to a dinner for Fireside with Fallon Fatemi, Mark Cuban, and then Maz Jabrani. I was about to say Jabrani.
Yeah,
Jabrani.
You got it.
Maz Jabrani. And so Maz was doing a keynote speech at a podcast conference, and I was attending. And so we got to do dinner the night before, and Maz was incredible. And Maz and I chatted for a while, as did Mark Cuban and I. And it was a really neat experience in the kind of an intimate setting, you know, I don't know, 50 people or 40 people or something like that. And a couple of days after that, when Maz goes up on stage and I don't know if you remember this, Maz, but you guys went up on stage and you and I had been talking. We've been talking about this app Fireside, and you get up, and during the keynote speech, as you're talking to Mark and Fallon, you start mentioning my name. You're like, "Where is Brian? Brian? Brian Green? Brian? Brian Green?" You start saying my name like multiple times.
I vaguely remember that. Why was I saying that? What was going on?
Because I don't know. Because I said something that maybe you found interesting about Fireside. Like I had mentioned something I found interesting about Fireside.
Mm-hmm.
But you said that, and that led some people in the audience to think that I was something that I was not. Like I had some kind of connection with Maz and Mark and Fallon. So I became like a semi-superstar for 30 seconds until they realized I had nothing interesting to say. And I always appreciated that. But I have watched The West Wing. And here's where the point of the story. I had watched The West Wing multiple times. Like I've watched it, rewatched it, rewatched it, rewatched it. And I didn't realize until my third rewatch, shortly after you and I met, maybe a month or two after, that you actually were in an episode of The West Wing. And I was like, "Holy shit, is that Maz? That is Maz. That was, how did you land that role? Like, did you want to be an actor? I think you have a movie that's fucking hilarious, Jimmy Vestwood, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I love it. I think it's a cult classic. It's one of my favorite indie comedy films.
Oh, I appreciate you.
But did you want to be an actor or a comedian, or did you just want to be
an actor? Yeah, no, I started, so back in the day, I was a big fan of Eddie Murphy's, and then I wanted to be a comedian, and then coming from an immigrant family, they're like, "No, you got to be a lawyer or a doctor,"
right,
and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so when I was 12, I started doing musicals at school, and I loved being on stage. So I was actually an actor before I was a comedian. And then throughout high school, I did plays. And then when I went to college. I did political science to please my parents, but I still took a acting class.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of, there was always acting. And then when I first decided to finally go for it, I did. My acting was paying for my comedy. Because when you first start with stand-up comedy, you know, the local clubs will pay you like, you know, 10 bucks, 15 bucks to do 15 minutes. You're not making a living.
Yeah.
So what would happen is I'd get like a guest star here, guest star there. The first guest star I got was in Malcolm in the Middle. And then I'd get other ones. So I pop up in things here and there. And then the West Wing one was cool because I got to play the Saudi ambassador to the United States and have a scene with Martin Sheen and John Spencer. And it was really like, you know, hold it in kind of acting. And
yeah,
it was cool, man. I mean, I'm down for more if you know, Martin Scorsese's watching, I'm available.
West Wing to me is one of the most brilliant television, dramatic television shows that's ever been made. Certainly one of the best that's ever been written, but at least the first four or five seasons by Aaron Sorkin. What was it like to be on set with, I just always wanted to ask you this. What was it like to be on set with Martin Sheen and John Spencer, who is, in my opinion, the best in that cast and that ensemble cast and the best of the best? John Spencer's got to be up there.
Well, yeah, you got to, like, you believed he was the character he was. That's always these great actors where you go, is that guy actually, is he actually in, does he actually work at the White House? Like, yeah. You know, is he really the chief of staff that he just brought in? Almost feels like a documentary. Matter of fact, just a side note, if you remember the first Beverly Hills Cop, the guy who plays Axel Foley's police chief, who's yelling at him, Axel, all that. I think he was either a mayor of Detroit or
was a police chief. I just read this because they put Netflix, you know, Eddie Murphy did a reboot with on Netflix.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I read that he had passed away, but he was like one of the only guys that wasn't invited back because he obviously there was no where do you send the invitation. So but I read that he was an actual police chief and someone was opining about how he played the role so brilliantly, probably because he understood it so well.
Yeah. That, but also he ended up in some kind of big corruption. I don't know if you saw that too. It got all crazy, but but you got to read more about it. But John Spencer was great. He and Martin Sheen, and it was interesting because at the time I was doing a play at the Mark Taper Forum here in Los Angeles, and I had a small part in the play, but I was able to do this because it was a one day guest star. You just go and do it, and of course I'm going in to do a scene with these two legends. I'm going to be off book, whether they're legends are there or not. I'm going to be off book because especially as a guest star, you're not going to show up and be like, hey guys, just give me a few minutes. You know, can we run these? Right. Can you run lines with me? So I was off book. And then John Spencer was funny because he came up to me, kind of gave me a nice compliment. He's like, you know, it's always great working with theater actors because they come in prepared. And I was like, yes, sir, I am a theater actor.
Yes, sir. I happen to be doing a play. Do you have a copy of the script I could borrow real quick?
Yeah, exactly. So it was funny.
It was a great turn. And in a weird turn of kind of art imitates life, life imitates art, he famously has a heart attack in the show and a year later had a heart attack and passed away. John Spencer as the chief of staff had a heart attack, which then changed his role completely. Mm-hmm. And then he actually passed away while filming the last season of the West Wing from a heart attack, what they call a widowmaker, if you will. Maz, I've been checking out bits and pieces of your new special, Birds and Bees, which is available on YouTube, completely free, by the way. So go ahead and check it out, listeners out there in the podcast universe. One of the things you said that I thought was very interesting and resonated with me was you said back in the day, they said that if you tell it, they said back in the day, if you create an hour for an HBO special, you tell it. I don't want to take your joke from you.
Well, I'm not going to tell. I mean, it's basically so the current tour I'm doing is different from what I did in the Birds and the Bees. So I haven't done that Birds and the Bees material in a while, but the gist of it was how TikTok and all these new social media sites that come on, they just get shorter and shorter. I said, you know, when I first started, they said, you know, you got to film a 1 hour comedy special, put it on HBO, people discover you, your career takes off. Then I go, a few years later, they go, you got to take 5 minutes of the 1 hour, you put on YouTube, people discover you, career takes off. Then I go, they said, you got to take 1 minute of the five right. minutes, put it on Instagram. People discover you, career takes off. I go, now they say you got to take 3 seconds of yeah. the 1 minute. You put it on TikTok, people discover you, career takes off. And I said, I tell my son, I go, 3 seconds, I don't even know what to say. All I can say is hello, right. goodbye. And my son goes, that's perfect. You know?
That's so true.
Yeah, but I mean, but this ironically, some of these apps now want you to do longer. And yes. then, and you know what's crazy about it? It's like we are, it used to be, people would complain about like, oh, there's only a handful of gatekeepers. You got to, you know, if you want to end up on the network and all that stuff. Now, of course, there's a million places mm-hmm. where you can be seen and found. But these apps also have their own kind of chasing the, you know, the hamster wheel thing.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while, you guys seen it. There's always somebody going like, did you hear TikTok is now doing horizontal videos? So a friend of mine who was doing well on there, he goes, you should post videos horizontally on TikTok. And I did. And they looked horrible. They just looked really small. But they were getting views because for some reason, TikTok was like, oh, look, we're going to push it and get more views. Yeah. It was getting more views. Fewer comments. So I'm like, so are they real views or what's going on? And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to stick with what I know.
Yeah,
that's it. Well, your relationship with social media is good, I would imagine, because you do get a lot of views on your social media. But I get it in a bigger sense that, like, you know, Chrissy and I start podcasting and we're trying to grow an audience. So, you know, we're going to do the things that we know to do audio wise. So Clubhouse comes and then we go do Clubhouse. And then I spend a million hours in Clubhouse, almost get a divorce, ignore my children, probably miss the birth of two of them. And then Clubhouse just dissipates overnight. It goes nowhere.
You would text me and be like, get in my room now.
It's 2 a.m. Chrissy's like, I'm not, what? I'm not fucking doing that. You do it. You be an idiot. Yeah. You chase that dragon. You're going to be rich if you just do more Clubhouse rooms. We're all going to be rich. Soon Coca-Cola is going to be sponsoring every room. Right. And then on to Fireside, and then on to the next, and then on to Twitter Spaces, and then on to the next thing, and the next thing. And I understand that's the nature of the kind of Silicon Valley, is you got to always be chasing the next high, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then it's the same thing with social media. What's the next big trend? Put stickers on, do shorter videos, do longer videos. I just read this morning in like a podcast rag, the number one way that people discover podcasts, YouTube. And YouTube is now saying the longer the video, the better. Well, that's not what they were saying 5 years ago. They were saying, don't make it over a minute or you're not going to get any views. And it's just insane. It's hard to keep up with that. And so I think our philosophy has become just be steady Eddie. Do what you know to do.
And that's it.
If you win, you win. And if you lose, well, at least you gave it the best shot you could, doing what you know how to do. Stay in your lane.
It's like the stock market. You know, like we all, I mean, I'm not an expert. I can't tell you what's going up, when it's going down, all that stuff. But for the most part, if you talk to people who are supposed to give us advice, they say stay in it for the long run. Yes. And that's why you also should be enjoying it. Now, if you're able to enjoy it and you're able to hit a sweet spot where you're actually making some income off of it, you won. Now, if you're able to enjoy it, make some income off of it, and then, you know, have that income buy you a house, you're a superstar. I mean, it's so you're right. And to the point of like, you know, MySpace came and went. I'm always like thinking, well, what happens if tomorrow Instagram's like, we're done. I'm like, oh, well, there goes all those followers. You know? So,
don't be a one-legged table is what I would often say to people, even though I feel like we are a one-legged table. That's like, you know, that's what it is. Hey, Maz, I wanted to mention something. Since we met, I've been following you and I watch a lot of your comedy. You're very dancey on stage. You have a lot of musicality to your movements. And we've talked to a lot of comedians and I've said this, that some comedians are really, I find them to be very musical, right? There's intonation, then they go up and down and they miss a beat and they take a beat and they, you know, all that other stuff. But I see you as like a very physical, not like slapstick comedy, but you're always dancing on stage and moving. Were you doing a lot of dancing in the house when you were kids?
No, I don't know if that comes from like being nervous on stage. I'm not quite sure what it is. I mean, the truth is like, when I perform in LA, like in town, hold on. Excuse me.
Bless you.
When I perform in town, there's no music there's a little bit of music when you go up, but there's no like dancing and stuff. But when I perform on my headlining shows or my specials, I start it with a dance. And I've found that gets the energy going. People are like clapping and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm already got them here. and then we can go, you know. But I still keep moving. I remember watching Chris Rock. I think it was,
Bring
I forget
the
which.
Pain.
Maybe it was Bring the Pain. He was walking around the stage a lot. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
He stalks it like a tiger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? I go, moving around is kind of cool. I like that. Because I, you know, some people like very, they'll just have the mic stand the whole time, which although that's, that focuses attention as well, you know. But I do, I think sometimes like the physicality adds. I find I'm doing a lot of hip thrusts lately, and it makes it makes the punchline funnier. I don't know why.
I find it to be very funny.
I love a good hip thrust.
Yeah, me too. I like a good. You know, I saw Chris live this last tour that he did in a like a 4,000 seat venue here in Atlanta, and we were up pretty close. And he just the way he moves around this, he owns the stage, but he moves and he commands your attention. Mm-hmm. Like he demands your attention. Not only is he just that kind of person, but then it's there's something very very visual about what he's doing. Yeah, and then but there are a lot of comics who are literally stuck to the ground, and they're some of them are funny too. But I think I prefer a little bit of movement
And hip thrusting.
Yeah, it's my ADD.
You know, it's funny you guys say that because in the most recent iteration of my stand-up, I show comments I'm getting on social media, and then I make fun of them.
Yeah.
And one lady commented, she goes, it says something like, it said like, Maz, when you move around stage, you move around stage a lot. It makes me nervous. It feels like you always have to go pee. Can you do something about it? I did have pee before.
So you're out on tour right now, working on the next hour of comedy, I'm sure, for the next special. How many hours have you put together since you started this?
I think I have seven. The first one was a group one, so let me just count it while I'm with you guys. I always forget. So
was that Access of Evil?
That was Access of Evil. You know, Brian, you're on it, man.
So I stalked you after we met. Yeah, you're gonna give me 15 minutes of fame.
You were so excited when you came back.
Fan for life. Yeah.
So there was Access of Evil. Then my first solo was Brown and Friendly. Then I said I come in peace. Then I said I'm not a terrorist, but I played one on TV. Then it was Immigrant. Then it was Pandemic Warrior. And then it was Birds and the Beast. So seven, if you include that first one that was kind of the group. Yeah.
Yeah, the group. So you have seven. That's got to be an incredibly difficult thing to do. We've talked to a few comics about this, too. It's got to be difficult. But you put this hour together and you whittle it down and you massage it and you figure out this joke goes better here and I'll place this one there and here's my closer and here's my opener and here's a little wiggle room in the middle and then you got it and then you just kind of toss it. Is that keep you like, I'm sure that also keeps the creative juices flowing, right? Is that part of the game?
Yeah, you have to. Yeah. You have to. I always say like the I'm jealous of musicians. They write a song. Everybody wants to keep hearing that same song.
Yeah.
You write a joke. Nobody wants to hear that joke again, maybe once or twice, but for the most part, every time your special comes out, I've had so many times where a special came out, I'm watching, oh, this is great. It came together. People are watching. And then I go, oh shit, I got to write new stuff.
Completely start
over.
I cannot
do that again.
Yeah.
Eddie Brill. Do you know Eddie Brill, the guy who used to book Letterman?
Okay, yeah.
So Eddie Brill used to say to me, if you can be a comic and put together one solid hour in your entire career, you consider yourself successful. So those who do it repeatedly are at the top of their are at the top of our game. Those comedians who can continue to refine and massage and come up with new ideas and continue to be creative. I find you to be very funny, Maz.
Well, I appreciate that, Brian, but also I will say that there's a couple of factors involved. Number one is hopefully if you're able to have a fan base that watches or follows or buys or supports or whatever, that helps. So there are some brilliant comedians who just never quite found that fan base. So maybe they're not putting together as many. I was lucky that I had a fan base that was willing to watch my stuff. The other thing I will say is that as your life evolves, you hope that you write new stuff because you get bored of the old stuff and also your life changes. So if you look at my early specials, I'm talking about my kids being babies. Now I'm talking about my kids being teenagers. So I would hope you would evolve just for your own sanity. You know, and some guys don't. Some guys are stuck, guys and gals are stuck in their jokes from 20 years ago. And to me, that's like, yeesh, like, and you know,
yeah. Your kids like talk skibbity and all that? Are they like into all that? You know, have you seen the TikTok videos where they're like skibbity doo and you got Raz and Riz?
They speak
a secret language you don't understand.
I've heard a little bit of it. They'll like, you know, but they're, my daughter's 13, my son's 16. So once in a while they'll tell me something that's like a thing, but they're not as on social media, thank God, as a lot of kids are. But they're watching and they're now playing games and stuff, but they're not necessarily like creating or, you know, I tell them, I say, you control the phone. The phone doesn't control you. So
good for you.
You know, hopefully they pay attention.
I'm already putting this message into my children. My children are much younger than yours, even though we're probably of similar age. My children are, I don't have one above 7 years old. But they're already, you know, when mom and dad are on the phone or the iPad or whatever, that's what they want to be in. That's what they see. And once they get that in their brains, then it's really hard. So we have very strict and tough rules around when and where, you know, okay, you can play a Mickey Mouse game or whatever to 15 minutes and then you're done. And I'm already telling them, you're not getting a cell phone that connects to the internet until you're 35. Trust me, you're going to thank me for this later.
Yes.
Because these things... they are like, they seem like freedom. They're balls and chains, and they will fuck you up. And especially when I can't, if I had a cell phone that was connected to the internet when I was a teenager, and this is no joke, I'm not sure I would be here. Like, I just think that's, it's terribly dangerous is really
absolutely
what it is.
Absolutely. No, you're 100%. I mean, I'm addicted to my phone. Even when I'm, you know, lunch with somebody, you're always looking down. You're like, and then afterwards you're like, oh, it was just a bunch of, you know, texts asking me for donations or something.
Yeah,
you know,
so, exactly.
Yeah. Worst mistake I ever made was telling the candidate I like that I was willing to like them.
To vote for them.
I never stopped getting texts.
By the way, it's not just the one you like. I donated to one and then I started getting messages from the other party.
And I'm
like, come on, guys.
I got a lady knocked on my door one time. And she said, "Are you going to vote for this guy?" And I said, "Nah, not my style. Thanks anyway. You know, I'm going to vote for the other team this time." And she said, "Well, you're making a goddamn mistake." And I said, "Wait, you came to my door."
That's the way to change my vote.
I go, that's not a convincing way to do that. And forever and ever, I get mailers from that candidate or that super PAC or whatever it is. And I think to myself, did they think coming to my door and threatening me was going to be the best way to get me on their team?
Yeah.
But, you know, politics is so divisive these days. Did the audience change for you? I mean, so you've been around for a minute. Did the audience change? I guess, I see that in every part of our life, on airplanes, in grocery stores, at the gas station, people are ready to pop off, right?
Yeah.
They're just ready to pop off. And it largely has to do with which team you're on. It is so tribal right now. And there's so much angst and anger around those tribes that it's kind of difficult to navigate, right? Did the audience change? You talked about that one interaction, but the audience changed when around the election 2015-16?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sorry, there's somebody vacuuming back there.
That's okay.
You can hear it.
We have the gardeners come out.
The gardeners come
out
every time we record. They decide to come, even though we specifically tell them not to. Yeah.
I believe that, people got a little more on edge. It was crazy because I'll tell you, during the Iraq war, I would make fun of the Bush administration just because a lot of people were, and I did. And there was a couple times where somebody got upset and they were like, "You can't make fun of our commander in chief." And I was like, the whole point, we're supposedly going into Iraq, is to bring them democracy. And you're telling me that I can't practice my democratic right of making fun of the president. So that was then. And then again, it felt like it kind of quieted down for a little bit. But then once Trump came in, it felt like it was on steroids and people were really getting offended and really. Yes. And the crazy thing is, if you just mention his name, it causes a big thing. Like my politics is left leaning. So you could do jokes that are left leaning and it won't offend some of his fans. But if you say his name, it's like Pavlov. They're like, "What did you say?" And I remember when you just said, I actually was, I'm going to be in Raleigh. And I remember being in Raleigh a little bit after January 6th, like a few months after. And I think at that point, most people were aware and were admitting that January 6th was a bad thing. And so I had some jokes about the people who stormed the Capitol, and there was a husband and wife in the front, and the husband was like steaming. Like, I think he was already a denier of January 6th. And he I mean, he might've been there. I don't know.
Yeah. No, they were just visitors.
Yeah. They were visitors. Exactly. They were tourists. What are you talking about?
Tourists.
They were
tourists. With Mason, small
I, listen, as a brown person, I go, white people, you got funny names for your terrorists. Because if brown people had attacked the Capitol, they would have been terrorists. All right.
Oh, yes.
But I go, for white people, first you called them patriots. Yeah. Then they became tourists. Yeah. They're currently hostages. Have you heard this? Yeah. They call them hostages.
It's insane. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. Anyway, that day when I saw how upset this guy was getting, I came off stage and I was like, I told my opening act, I go, I think I'm going to stop doing that joke. I go, it divides the audience a lot. Yeah. There's some people that really get upset. And I said, by the way, I said, I'm going to stop talking about Trump completely. I said, because at that point I thought he was going to just go away. So like, I'm not going to talk about him. I don't need to, blah, blah, blah. Since he's come back, I haven't really talked about him on stage. On Twitter, I go off on him all the time. Yeah. But, and by the way, I'm going to keep calling it Twitter. I don't care what Elon Musk calls it.
The same
well,
too.
Apparently Elon agrees now too, because he's saying, should I call it Twitter again? No one ever stopped calling it Twitter.
I know.
Yeah. So all of that to say, I still don't do any jokes like where I make fun of him. Because first of all, on stage, I should say, because – again, I think it divides the room. And secondly, what am I going to say that other people have not? I would have to have a really good take. Like the last time I did it, I actually did it in Birds and the Bees. I did a joke about how the January 6th committee brought in Cassidy Hutchinson, who was the she worked, I think, under Mark Meadows.
Assistant to the chief of staff.
Chief of staff, right? And she said that she had heard that Trump choked his Secret Service agent. Or at least try to, and we don't know if he did or not. But I thought that was funny, and the bit I was doing was I said, "It's funny." It's funny because she said that, and I said the Republicans were like, "No way, he would never choke a Secret Service agent," and Democrats were like, "Yeah, way, he would totally do it." And I said, "What's crazy is that we all heard it, and we all thought it's possible. He's that crazy." And then in the joke, I go on to just talk about how I go, that's how crazy this guy is. Like, if you ever heard, like, President Dwight Eisenhower choked the Secret Service, and you're like, no way, he's a statesman. Yeah. But you hear Donald Trump, you're like, hey, it could have happened. And then I go, if you heard Biden choke the Secret Service agent, you'd be like, how old was the Secret Service agent?
Right.
You
know? So,
I try. It's a fine line you walk because you set people off. And the truth is, my opinion is what it is. It's my show. They don't have to be at my show. But and I truly like have passionate feelings about a lot of that stuff. And everybody does.
Yeah, we do too. But we have taken the line since about episode 20 that this needs we want a place for people to take a break largely.
There's so much
of that. If you listen to the show, you'll get the way we lean. It's left, right? You'll get the way that we lean. But we don't talk about it specifically unless it pierces kind of that fourth wall, assassination attempt. You got to address it when you do an episode 4 days a week.
Yeah. Right?
And no one wants that. Like, no one wants people to be assassinated. Political violence, in my opinion, is not going to solve any issues.
Right.
Create more.
Right.
But take a break from it. But when I address the audience about why we don't talk about this, it's because I don't have anything interesting to say that someone else hasn't already said. There are people that are smarter and better at punditry than me. And who fucking cares what Brian Greene has to think about the election? You are already opinionated about what you think about the election. Why am I going to change your mind? Now, I think it's important to activate, but I'm not sure this microphone is the right place or time to do that. Or I'd call it something else, like, you know, the election break or something like that.
No, if you were on a news program and giving your opinion, that's one thing. But your show, you choose to do what you want with your show. So currently my stand-up show, the idea is we're going to come together, we're going to laugh. You will hear some stuff that might be left-leaning. You're going to hear some stuff that might be considered, you know, not politically correct, whatever that is that you feel it is, you know. And ultimately, like, I even at the end of the show, I say the show is for everybody. I want everyone to come and laugh together. The problem becomes, I think, that some people, we also got to remind ourselves to have a sense of humor about our leaders.
Yes.
And I don't care who that person is. But if the person writes a joke, or somebody tells you a joke, and it's actually a funny joke, sometimes it's based in truth.
Yeah.
You should laugh. You shouldn't be so offended. It's not your grandmother. That leader doesn't care about you the way you think that leader cares about you. I just would encourage people to not take it so personally, you know.
I think comedy, almost every subject is beyond reproach. It's about the timing and the intent, right? But if comedy is comedy, if it's funny, it's funny. If you're making fun of my guy and it's funny, it's funny. If you're making fun of the other person, it's funny, it's funny. But I do understand that the nature of 2024, not everybody sees it that way. And there are a lot of people that are very passionate, like go to church kind of passionate about it, which is silly to me. But anyway,
I think you know, some people do feel, as someone who's traveled all over the world to do comedy, I will tell you, when I first started doing shows in the Middle East, they kept telling us, you know, don't make fun of the leaders. And I get it, because they didn't want to get in trouble. The promoters didn't want to get in trouble. And I sure as hell didn't want to get in trouble. When I hear that, like, people in America saying, don't make fun of our leaders, I go, do you know that you're basically parroting what is said in dictatorships? The beauty of this country is that the late night talk show hosts can make fun of our leaders. We should be able to make fun of our leaders. They're not as sacred as you make them, but in some people's mind they are. And the beauty of this country is that we have some irreverence, and I think that I will continue to make fun of those leaders whenever I want to.
And good for you.
And you do it so beautifully. Maz, you're a great guy. You're very funny. Birds and Bees on YouTube right now, forever touring through 2025, which we could appreciate. If you live in a town, he's likely coming to that town or somewhere close.
Yeah.
And your name is said Jabroni, not Jabroni, for those, including myself.
Brian, you're killing it, man. You're amazing. You got an A+, my friend. A+.
Nice.
Maz, friend of the show, you are welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much for being here.
Next time you come to Atlanta, Chrissy and I will be front row, ready to pop off at any mention.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you both. Have a great day. Stay cool. Hydrate. And let's get through this summer, man.
Let's get through the end of
be
the year.
Be safe on tour.
Let's get through the next January 6th.
Yeah,
let's see how it goes.
I know. All right, guys.
Thanks,
Maz. Thank
see
you.
Later.
Bye. Bye.
Hello, my fans. I mean, Brian and Chrissy's fans. Boy, have I got news for you. We are officially coming to Florida for TCB Live. That's right. You can come see Brian's bald head shining under the stage lights at Dania Beach Improv, Tuesday, September 24th, and at the Funny Bone in Orlando on Wednesday, September 25th. If you can't make it to see us in person, text us or call us at 212-433-3TCB and leave us a little love note instead. As always, please, please, please follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and on TikTok at TCB Podcast. Our content is shockingly good, so get after it. And you already know I put every single one of those links in the show notes. You're welcome.
Ah, Maz Jabroni. What a jabroni. It's Maz Jabroni. One of the things that Chrissy and I were laughing at is when there's a couple minutes before he actually comes on air, like during the commercial break. And so I was like, Maz Jabroni. I've known this guy for years. And I say jabroni because my twin brother and I are always calling each other jabronis. We're like, hey, jabroni, based on a wrestling character from the 80s. And he goes, Brian, just one thing before we go on air.
It's not
jabroni, not jabroni. And I'm like, are you sure?
He said, yes, I am sure.
He said, yes, I'm pretty positive. My name is Maz Jabroni. Anyway, Maz Jabroni from Tehran via California, from California via Tehran. And what a wonderful, wonderful guy. He's so pleasant to talk to. And this is how I found, you know what? He's not a bit different here than he was when I met him the first time.
When you were touching bald heads in the night.
When Mark Cuban was sending my wife videos. If you haven't heard the rest of the story, what happens in the middle of the night is Maz and I are talking, and then Mark kind of, you know, comes over, and so now it's all three of us talking. And Maz and I think we're talking about wives and where the wives were, how the wives were, whatever was going on. And Mark goes, oh, and I go, hey, listen, my wife loves you on Shark Tank, by the way, loves you. She thinks you're great. And he goes, oh, she does? She's a big fan? And I go, yeah. He goes, give me your phone. Open up your camera. Give me your phone. And so then he makes a video for Astrid. I won't share because I don't think he wants me to share, but I did. That's not the reason he sent the video, but he sent a video to my wife. And it's rather fucking funny. If I was an asshole, I'd put it out there on the internet, but I'm not going to do that because I like Mark.
Guy.
Yeah. So Maz Jabroni.
Jabroni.
Jabroni. God damn it, Brian. Maz.
Yeah.
Maz Jabroni.com for tickets and tour information. And then, of course, please do go watch his special Birds and Bees, now available on YouTube for 100% $0.00. 2:30 in the morning!
That's what time y'all stayed out till.
Oh, yeah. Well, we stayed out too. Maz snuck away. Maz did an Irish goodbye at some point during the night. He was just like floated away, as did Mark Cuban, by the way. He just kind of floated off into the night. And I kept trying to guess which bar they were at, getting drunker and drunker as I went along. I was like, where did they go? This bar? I don't know. Let's stay here for a drink. That bar? I don't know. Let's stay here for a drink.
I was also laughing, thinking about the one time that we did try to do the show on Fireside.
Oh, my God. What a clusterfuck. And we had to have like three tech guys calling us. And it was just such a
dumb person was on it.
I know, one person. Well, there were five people, but four of them dropped off an hour after we were trying to get the show started. We just kept playing the intro music over and over again.
We're almost there.
We're almost there.
Let's go.
I swear to God. Yeah. But to be fair, I think five people was about how many were on the air at that time. So. Anyway, well, best
good
of
times.
Luck to Fireside. Yeah.
Yes.
Listen, maybe there's a master plan that I don't know about. I heard they just got a round of funding like not even a year ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, what are they funding? I mean, you know, but who knows? I don't know. You never know. Mark's smart.
He's
up to something. He actually developed the concept of streaming. Did you know that?
Oh,
his company was one of the first companies to ever stream anything live.
I did not know that.
Yes. And so Mark did pretty well for himself.
Yeah,
I would
a little
say. Yeah, so I think every time we stream, we have to pay him a dollar or something like that. Okay, we are going to be in Florida. Wonderful, beautiful, the lovely Florida. We're going to be in Dana Beach, which is just south of Fort Lauderdale, just north of Miami. We're calling it the Miami area because that sounds better. It's going to be in Miami. Let's just say Miami. It's in Miami. Dana Beach Improv. Those tickets are now available. More information on the website. You can go to the Dana Beach Improv website. Buy them directly. Do not buy them anywhere else. Orlando Funny Bone on the 25th. So that's the 24th in Miami and the 25th in Orlando at the Funny Bone. You can buy the tickets on their website, or you can find the link on our website or our social media. 212-433-3TCB. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas. Let us know if you're going to be at the show. At The Commercial Break on Instagram. Finally posting on TikTok again, The Commercial Break. Woo! And YouTube.com/The Commercial Break for my and Chrissy's interview with Maz Jabroni and selected episodes. Chrissy, that's all I can do for today.
I think so.
I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I always say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.